Listen to Let It Happen on Saturdays at 1 p.m. till 2 p.m. for a little bit of psych, a little bit of pop, and a whole lot of rock and roll radio. Blasting on the stereo. This is the one so good for. Find somewhere for you. And that's only on CFRC 101.9 FM.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
They are fighting so hard to steal this damn thing. Look at what's going on. Look at what's going on in your state. Every day, they're talking about extending hours and stuff. What? Who ever heard of this stuff? We should have one-day voting and paper ballots.
As Donald Trump stirs up false claims of voter fraud ahead of Election Day, we'll speak with Neil Makija, chair of the election board in Montgomery, Pennsylvania. He says you're being lied to about voter fraud.
Picture this, an America where your voice matters equally, as much as anyone else's, where your voice carries the same weight no matter who you are, where you're from, or what you have. That's the promise of democracy. One person, one vote. Sounds simple, right? But it's revolutionary. And right now, that promise is in danger.
We'll also speak with the former general counsel of the Federal Election Commission, then to Gaza, to Save the Children's Rachel Cummings.
The situation for children in Gaza is dire. After 1 year of conflict and constant bombardment, multiple displacements, children are living in constant fear. Deep concern about the immediate and the longer-term impacts of that.
And finally to Michigan, where Trump and Harris campaigned in the battleground state over the weekend, seeking support from the state's 200,000 Arab American and Muslim voters, many of whom have denounced U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza.
This year has been difficult, given the scale of death and destruction in Gaza, and given the civilian casualties and displacement in Lebanon. It is devastating. And as president, I will do everything in my power to end the war in Gaza.
We'll speak with the mayor of Dearborn, who refused to meet with Donald Trump, but has not endorsed Kamala Harris. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump are both headed to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania today on the final day of campaigning before Tuesday's election. Harris is scheduled to also hold three other events in Pennsylvania, in Scranton, in Allentown, and in Philadelphia. Trump's also heading to Raleigh, North Carolina, Reading, Pennsylvania, and will end in Grand Rapids, Michigan tomorrow. More than 78 million voters have already cast their ballots. On Sunday, Trump held a rally in Lititz, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, where he told supporters he shouldn't have left the White House after losing to Joe Biden 4 years ago.
We had the safest border in the history of our country the day that I left. I shouldn't have left. I mean, honestly, because we did so well.
During the same rally, Trump also said he wouldn't mind if someone shot through a crowd of journalists covering his rally.
And to get me, somebody would have to shoot through the fake news. And I don't mind that so much, because I don't mind that.
For months, pollsters have predicted the presidential race will come down to seven battleground states: Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia. But over the weekend, the most prominent pollster in Iowa, Ann Seltzer, released the Des Moines Register poll, which showed Harris has taken a shocking 3-point lead in Iowa, which Trump easily won in 2016 and 2020. The poll showed women voters have shifted heavily toward Harris in Iowa, where a 6-week abortion ban took effect in July. In related news, thousands took part in a women's march to the White House on Saturday.
We got to stand up for democracy. We have to stand up for a woman's right to have control over her body, control over her life. Women's rights are human rights. And we were back in the hallways. I'm a 77-year-old woman. I remember when women were crying and carrying on with coat hangers and other kinds of means to save their lives.
Top United Nations officials are warning again the entire Palestinian population in North Gaza is, quote, at imminent risk of dying from disease, famine, and violence. In a warning issued on Friday, the heads of 15 humanitarian groups wrote, quote, the situation unfolding in North Gaza is apocalyptic. The area has been under siege for almost a month, denied basic aid and life-saving supplies, while bombardment and other attacks continue, unquote. According to UNICEF, Israeli attacks killed more than 50 children over a 48-hour period this weekend in the Jabalia refugee camp. Earlier today, Israeli forces shelled the Kamal Adwan Hospital. The hospital's director said multiple children were injured when the Israeli shells struck the pediatric ward and nursery. Israel's also accused of attacking a polio vaccination center in Gaza City, injuring at least four children. On Friday, an Israeli airstrike killed Palestinian photojournalist Bilal Mohammed Rajab, bringing the death toll of journalists killed in Gaza to as high as 183 over the last 13 months. Aid groups fear the humanitarian situation will soon worsen in Gaza, as Israel has officially notified the United Nations that it has cut off ties to UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. The head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, condemned Israel's move.
This ban will not make Israel safer. It will only deepen the suffering of the people of Gaza and increase the risk of disease outbreaks.
On Friday, the Pentagon announced new deployments to the Middle East, including B-52 long-range bombers and ballistic missile defense destroyers. In a statement, the Pentagon said the move was done in part for the, quote, defense of Israel, unquote. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, a group of progressive lawmakers led by Rashida Tlaib and Cori Bush have sent President Biden a letter warning the growing U.S. involvement in regional wars in the Middle East has not been authorized by Congress. The lawmakers wrote, quote, these destructive wars must end, as must any unauthorized U.S. involvement in them, they wrote. Here in New York City, protesters took to the streets Saturday to demand no votes for genocide. Protesters decried both Kamala Harris and Donald Trump for supporting Israel's war on Gaza and refusing to back an arms embargo on Israel. Participants at the protest included Claudia de la Cruz, who's running for president on the Party for Socialism and Liberation ticket.
We are here to remind the capitalist state that there is an entire movement of hundreds of thousands of people all across this country that has been demanding a ceasefire, that has been demanding an arms embargo, that has been demanding an end to the expansion of genocide and war in the Middle East, and that we have not been heard, we have not been considered, and in that same way, we will engage in our political right not to engage with a two-party system that continuously insists on paying for and bombing babies across the Middle East.
Meanwhile, in London, pro-Palestinian protesters held a symbolic die-in in front of the British Prime Minister's office Saturday. In Spain, King Felipe, Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, and other officials were met with furious crowds as they toured the flood-stricken Valencia region, where at least 214 people died last week. Locals threw mud at the king and his entourage and shouted out, "Killer, shame, and you abandon us," amidst mounting public outrage over the delayed warnings before the disaster and the slow delivery of aid in the flood's wake. In Colombia, The UN Biodiversity Summit, known as COP16, ended without a much sought-after agreement on funding by wealthy countries. Greenpeace International said, quote, the world has lost 5 to 10% of all insect species in the last 150 years. There will be no way out of this terrifying biodiversity crisis if global North countries continue to put money above life on our planet, they said. Negotiators from smaller countries said they had to abandon talks after they stretched past the official end of the summit because they could not afford to change their flight plans. But some good news emerged from the summit as well, including a measure establishing a permanent indigenous consulting body at the UN to weigh in on conservation issues. This is Camila Paz Romero, spokesperson for indigenous peoples at the summit.
Esta es una ocasión sin precedentes.
This is an unprecedented event in the history of multilateral agreements on the environment. The indigenous groups and the local communities of the world are connected through our knowledge systems on how to take care of life and biodiversity. Let's remember the long way we have advanced with this agreement. This new subsidiary organ is an example for the rest of the world. In it, the different parties recognize the constant need for our complete and effective participation.
Environmentalists also welcome progress on the Global Oceans Treaty, which groups hope will be ratified by June 2025, as well as a new measure for drug companies to share profits from products based on genetic data derived from nature. Moldova's EU-aligned president, Maia Sandu, has won a second term following a runoff vote which pitted the incumbent against a pro-Moscow opponent. Sandu's national security adviser accused Russia of massive interference. This is President Sandu at her victory speech.
Moldova has been under an unprecedented attack in the history of all Europe. Dirty money, illegal vote buying, the interference in electoral processes by hostile forces from outside the country and by criminal groups, lies, sowing hatred and fear within our society. Our people have united, and freedom and the citizens have won. Peace and hope for a better life have prevailed.
Meanwhile, in the Republic of Georgia, prosecutors are investigating allegations of election fraud against President Salome Zurabishvili, refused last week to recognize the parliamentary election victory of the ruling Georgian Dream Party. She accuses Georgian Dream of using Russian-style tactics and propaganda to rig the elections. The EU has suspended Georgia's EU membership process over its foreign influence law passed in June, which critics say is modeled after Russian laws. The Sudanese Doctors Union says fighters for the paramilitary rapid support forces raped at least 47 people, including 3 minors in the eastern Al Jazeera state, as part of a retaliation campaign against the Sudanese army. An 11-year-old girl died from her bleeding. This comes amidst a spate of recent reports on widespread sexual assault as the devastating civil war in Sudan rages on. A UN report has accused militia fighters of using rape as part of a genocidal campaign in Darfur to eliminate non-Arab ethnic groups like the Masalit. One survivor said her attacker told her, quote, we will make you give birth to Arab children. Aid groups are reporting an increase in suicides among rape survivors and women who fear being raped. And news from Puerto Rico, an estimated 50,000 people attended a rally Sunday organized by the center-left coalition known as Alianza, or Alliance, ahead of Tuesday's election. The third-party coalition has gained momentum, with Puerto Rican voters disaffected with the two main parties over corruption scandals, austerity policies, and the disastrous privatization of the electrical grid. Alianza's gubernatorial candidate, Juan Dalmau, addressed the crowd.
As a people, during the last 55 years, we've suffered the consequences of the bipartisan red and blue, of a leadership which betrayed the faith that many Puerto Ricans had on them. Our moment to reclaim this country has arrived, to reclaim the government as ours.
This is Puerto Rican music superstar Bad Bunny, who also performed at the event.
In 2 days, whether there's thunder, rain, or lightning, nothing will stop us from making history. I will never forget how the government abandoned us during the hurricane. This November 5th, this Tuesday, November 5th, we are going to be the storm, and there's nobody who can save them.
Bad Bunny and other Puerto Rican celebrities like Fat Joe, who will be appearing with Kamala Harris in Pennsylvania today, recently threw their support behind Harris after a conservative so-called comic at Trump's Madison Square Garden rally called Puerto Rico an island of garbage. In Kentucky, a jury found former police officer Brett Hankison guilty of using excessive force and violating the civil rights of Breonna Taylor during the raid that killed Taylor inside her own home in 2020. Taylor was a black 26-year-old emergency technician. It's the first conviction of any of the Louisville police officers involved in the botched raid. A judge will sentence Hankison on March 12th, just one day ahead of the five-year anniversary of Breonna Taylor's death. He faces a maximum sentence of life in prison. And the musical icon Quincy Jones has died at the age of 91. During a seven-decade career, the trailblazing producer, arranger, and performer won 28 Grammys and helped transform the sound of popular music, from producing Michael Jackson's Thriller to overseeing the all-star recording of We Are the World. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. You're being lied to about voter fraud. Here's the truth. That's the headline of a New York Times guest essay by Neil Makija, the chair of the Board of Elections in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, who will help oversee elections in Montgomery County in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, where both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are campaigning today. As Trump continues to stir up false claims of voter fraud and similar rumors are flooding social media ahead of Election Day, we begin this show with a video Makija published with his essay called Our Elections Are Secure, The Right to Vote Is Not. The video is illustrated by Molly Crabapple and produced with Kim Bookbinder and Jim Batt.
Picture this, an America where your voice matters equally, as much as anyone else's, where your voice carries the same weight no matter who you are, where you're from, or what you have. That's the promise of democracy. One person, one vote. Sounds simple, right? But it's revolutionary, and right now, that promise is in danger. It started in earnest in 2020, when falsehood spread about our elections became part of a calculated effort to undermine our collective voice. Since then, election deniers have been telling Americans that millions of votes are being cast illegally. By dead people, by people coming in from outside the border, by people stuffing drop boxes with illegal ballots. Election deniers brought these claims to court and lost in over 60 cases before judges of both parties. Yet the lies persist and have exploded into violence. We saw this play out in the events of January 6th when people who believed in the lies tried to disrupt the peaceful transfer of power. It also hit closer to home. Just a few weeks after that, someone claiming the election was stolen fired gunshots into a campaign headquarters right here in Montgomery County, across the street from my office. My name's Neil Makija. Here in the battleground of Pennsylvania, I've been part of a new generation of election officials who are trying to combat the attacks on our democracy. I was born the son of immigrants and grew up in a small coal and steel town. I saw firsthand that while my family was different, we held shared values of hard work and opportunity in common with all of our neighbors. I also saw how easily our communities could be divided over differences. By 2020, I was teaching election law in Philadelphia. I had to explain to my students why some folks were trying to throw out millions of legally cast votes in Pennsylvania. I knew I couldn't just teach about this stuff anymore. I had to do something. So I ran for office, and in 2023, I won. Now, as a Montgomery County Commissioner, I oversee the elections for 865,000 people. I became the first Asian American to hold this position in all of Pennsylvania's history. My fellow commissioner, Jamila Winder, is the first black woman. We are living proof of what democracy can look like. When I took office as chair of the Board of Elections, I found that the lies about our elections have become worse than ever. Every public meeting is now full of conspiracy theories. But here's what I've learned. Our elections are secure. You are more likely to get struck by lightning than to find voter fraud. Here's why. We have layers of protection to ensure that no one can vote more than once. And starting when a person registers to vote, we make sure that they're eligible citizens over 18 by Election Day. Whether you vote in person or by mail, there are full paper trails every step of the way. Mail-in ballot envelopes are stamped with unique barcodes. They can be safely returned through secure drop boxes, which are monitored 24/7. Our county voter services and sheriffs manage highly secure daily pickups of the ballots. And every single ballot is scanned and kept safe and secure. After each election, we conduct multiple public audits to detect any irregularities. If we do detect an issue, or if it's just a very close election, the law requires a full recount. Pulling off widespread voter fraud with 10,000 different locally run elections across the country would be like trying to rob every bank in America at the same time. It's just not happening. In my county alone, on Election Day, we have 2,700 poll workers across 430 precincts. These are your friends and neighbors of all parties working together to help everyone vote. Witnessing the incredible care that goes into ensuring everyone has the chance to vote, most county officials will appropriately certify an election. If our elections are this secure, the truth is, none of these lies have been about election integrity. It's always been about power. American democracy started with just 6% of people being eligible to vote. It took generations upon generations of activists subjecting themselves to violent opposition to expand voting rights to women, to people of color, and young people, to a majority of our country. These rights were hard won. There are some who are afraid of democracy in an ever-evolving, inclusive America. They're part of a shrinking minority that wants to entrench itself in power and enact policies that set us back to a time when we had no rights. Instead of celebrating record voter participation, in recent years, anti-democracy politicians have run for office specifically to introduce laws making it harder for us to vote. They continue to lie about the security of our process and even go as far as to deny the certification of free and fair elections. Inevitably, this leads to violence. This isn't just an attack on voting. It's part of an attack on the American ideal that we all deserve a voice. To protect democracy, we can't just play defense. We need to go on offense to expand voting rights and access. We can make early voting easier, provide language assistance, support community voting centers. We can even bring mobile polling places to senior centers or college campuses where voters don't drive. We need a movement in every corner of the country to celebrate our hard-won right to vote. It's time to step up and support those who will hold sacred our democratic process, who will reject violence and accept the outcome of elections no matter the result. The vast majority of us agree on this, because in the end, this is bigger than a policy debate. America is on the cusp of something unprecedented, a truly multiracial, inclusive democracy, where we respect our differences and our rights, where our highest courts and halls of power truly seek to represent the best interests of everyone. That's never existed before, not here, not anywhere. That America is within our grasp at this moment, but it could slip away. This is the dream we've been chasing since 1776. It's now up to us to make it real.
Neil Makija, chair of the election board in Montgomery, Pennsylvania, reading his guest essay, Our Elections Are Secure, The Right to Vote Is Not. The video picked up by the New York Times. It was illustrated by Molly Crabapple and produced with Kim Bookbinder and Jim Batt. When we come back, we'll speak with Commissioner Makija, as well as former general counsel of the Federal Election Commission, Larry Noble. Stay with us. Witching Hour by Quincy Jones, the musical icon, has died at the age of 91. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump are both headed to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania today on the final day of campaigning before Tuesday's election. Harris is scheduled to hold three other events in Pennsylvania, in Scranton and Allentown and Philadelphia. Trump is also heading to Raleigh, North Carolina, Reading, Pennsylvania, and Grand Rapids, Michigan tonight. More than 78 million voters have already cast their ballots in the 2024 election. For months, pollsters have predicted the presidential race will come down to seven states: Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia. But over the weekend, the most prominent pollster in Iowa, Ann Selzer, released the Des Moines Register poll, which showed Harris has taken a shocking three-point lead in Iowa, which Trump easily won in 2016 and 2020. The poll showed women voters have shifted heavily toward Harris in Iowa, where a six-week abortion ban took effect in July. For more, we go to the battleground state of Pennsylvania. We're joined by Neil Makija, who serves as Montgomery County Commissioner and chair of the Board of Elections in the county, the most populous suburb of Philadelphia. Also with us in Potomac, Maryland, is Larry Noble, the former general counsel of the Federal Election Commission, now adjunct professor at American University, Washington College of Law. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Neil Makija, that was a fascinating video essay you did of your life and the elections in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. It seems, especially as this Des Moines Register poll has come out, which predicted Trump's victory in Iowa in 2016 and 2020, but now, clearly, it has so shocked even the Trump campaign, he has doubled down on allegations of fraud around the country, and particularly focusing on Pennsylvania, where he and Kamala Harris will be today. Talk more about why you think the elections are safer than they've ever been, yet the allegations of fraud are greater than ever.
So thank you so much for having me on for this topic. And, you know, when I took office earlier this year, I had thought that we would have seen some of the disinformation die down after 2020, given that the former president took these claims to court in 60 cases, as the video describes, and lost, because there was never any evidence of widespread fraud. But unfortunately, as we've seen with other misinformation online, the more they repeat it, the more people believe it. And so he's got friends like Elon Musk that are perpetuating the idea that there are millions of votes being cast illegally, whether it's from non-citizens or from individuals they don't even describe, they can't prove, they can't show. They're perpetuating this idea that our system is not secure. And what I've done and tried to do throughout my tenure this year is make sure that in our communities and more broadly, we're giving people the facts step by step on all the safeguards that exist here in Pennsylvania and across the country. And as you say, they are more secure than ever because our system has been challenged and questioned to such a degree that we've reviewed every step of the process and done everything we can to make sure that the process has integrity. And when you have it being run by 2,800 poll workers, as we do here in Montgomery County, you have people from all political parties, friends and neighbors simply helping each other vote and exercise their fundamental rights. So when Trump casts doubt on that, he's really casting doubt on ordinary people.
Explain why Pennsylvania is so crucial to the election of President of the United States, Neil.
Well, all eyes are on Pennsylvania, and the candidates are here today, the day before the election, because we have 19 electoral votes, and this is a state that, from all indications, is the closest race in the country. It could decide the election. It's a big, diverse state. I grew up in a coal and steel town in a rural part of the state where a lot has changed and unfortunately has been more receptive to the message of Donald Trump. But there's both Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, as well as, most importantly, the suburbs, including where I am in Montgomery County, that have shifted in the other direction. That are likely places where Kamala Harris is going to make gains And yet the state remains divided quite evenly. I think the Seltzer poll is interesting. I think some of the polling could be off because they could be hurting and afraid to show that someone is breaking is breaking into an advantage. But what we're seeing right now in Montgomery County is that people are voting at historic rates. And what we don't know is, are there crossover votes happening? We know more Republicans are voting by mail than in 2020 and fewer Democrats. A lot of that is by nature of us getting past the pandemic and people feeling okay walking into their polling place. But we've had about 160,000 people vote already, and we expect several or 3 to 4 times that in person. So we're looking for historic turnout here in the suburbs.
Can you explain how the motor election vans work?
Yes. So look, when I took office, we wanted to do everything possible to make it easier for people to vote. And one of those things was expanding satellite locations where you can request a mail-in ballot and submit it on the spot. And we decided to create a mobile satellite office, basically a voter van. It's kind of like an ice cream truck where you can submit your ballot. You can register to vote, request it, and submit it all on the spot. And the idea there was to change the story. Right now, people are fearful. They are concerned about the integrity of the election. But in the process of getting out there and educating people, I'm trying to let them know that our exercising our right to vote is something to be celebrated. And so we show up in Montgomery County with our voter van. It's the first of its kind in Pennsylvania. We go to senior centers and college campuses, and we simply make it easy for people to vote on the spot. And of course, the Republicans and their lawyers sued me immediately when we set this up. But thankfully, it continues to roll. We stopped on a college campus at Bryn Mawr College here in Montgomery County. I remember being asked by someone on the right, why did you stop at a women's college? I said, well, because women have the right to vote. So we have to remind some folks on the right that, in fact, helping people vote is simply helping us live up to the promise of our democratic ideals.
You mentioned Elon Musk, who promised to give away $1 million a day to voters who sign up with his America PAC. He's been sued by the Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner for calling it an illegal—he calls it an illegal lottery scheme. Can you talk about the effect of this?
So I think one of the ironies about those who are perpetuating the lie that there is widespread fraud are often the people who are committing the fraud. And first and foremost, Donald Trump in his attempt, as we all know, in Georgia to find 11,000 some votes and to pressure election officials to do so. But now Elon Musk, who's being told by the Department of Justice that his scheme may violate the law and that they're investigating him. And he's also been sued by the District Attorney of Philadelphia for operating an illegal lottery. And fundamentally, it's very clear that they will say and do anything. And it's concerning because if they lose, it's going to really be a question of what their supporters do after the fact. And that's the biggest concern for me right now is if we know on election night, if, say, the Seltzer poll's accurate and Kamala Harris does very well, are any of their supporters going to believe the results, going to trust the results despite the integrity of the process?
I wanted to bring Larry Noble into this conversation, a former general counsel of the Federal Elections Commission. If you can start off by talking about the role of the FEC and what you are most concerned about right now.
The FEC was intended to be the civil enforcement agency for the federal campaign finance laws. It was created in the wake of Watergate. And the idea here was that we have contribution limits, we have limits on what the parties can do. All of it was to control the influence of money in politics. But the FEC over the years has really become more of a roadblock to real campaign finance enforcement than the enforcer. And what we saw is it went through various phases where it was active at one point as 3 Republicans, 3 Democrats, and then it became more partisan. where the Republicans became less willing to go after Republicans. And the Democrats would still generally vote for enforcement against Republicans and Democrats. And then it went through a stage where it became more ideological, which was which really means that the Republicans no longer vote for enforcement against Democrats or Republicans. And they just don't agree with the law. And so they're sitting on a commission where they don't agree with enforcing the law. And now we have a Democrat who has been voting more with the Republicans. So we have an agency that's supposed to be enforcing the campaign finance laws, but is not doing it. And it's opening up more loopholes as we go along. And in that context, what really worries me is that we have an election system, and that therefore means a government, which very much favors those with a lot of wealth. Those with a lot of wealth have the ability to influence elections the way that the rest of us don't. And I think it's critically important. I really appreciate the work that Neil is doing. I think he what he talked about was very important. But part of my feeling now is, while we have to fight to make sure everybody has the right to vote and everybody who has the right to vote is able to exercise that vote, we have a problem that once candidates are in office, they tend to follow and do what the wealthiest supporters wanted them to do. And we had a system, and we still technically have a legal system, that is supposed to keep all of these super PACs and the spending of all these hundreds of millions of dollars by individuals, keep them away from the campaigns and not have them coordinate in any way with the campaigns. And that's just not what's happening. So I'm concerned about the election administration, and I'm concerned about what happens also because of all the money in politics and how it's basically silencing the voter. The right to vote is sacrosanct. You have to be able to vote if you're eligible to vote. But your vote should mean something later in governance. It should not just then be drowned out by the money that the wealthy and people like Elon Musk are spending.
And what about what Elon Musk is sending? Yes, the Justice Department sent a letter, but it's the local DA in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, who sued. Why isn't this illegal, giving money to people to vote, $1 million a day?
I think it is illegal, and there are a lot of election law experts who think it's illegal. There's a federal law against paying somebody to register or urging them to register. And what this is doing is urging people to register by saying that if you're registered in these specific swing states, then you'll be eligible for this lottery. So it really, in my view, violates potentially two laws. One, the federal law about not paying people to register or to urge them to register, and then state lottery laws. And, you know, when I was in private practice, this is something we used to have to advise people. You're not only concerned about the federal campaign finance laws, you also have to be concerned about state lottery laws in these type of situations. So I think he is violating the law. But I think what Musk has shown at this point is that it's not likely he cares about that very much. He's just going to keep going ahead. And I think the bet they're placing is that if they can win, or if they can, after the election, throw up enough objections and get their people rallied and somehow take over, that all of this goes away. They don't have to worry about it anymore.
Can you talk about Citizens United? Also, what happened to the McCain-Feingold? That was Senator McCain, now deceased, and Senator Feingold of Wisconsin of, what, 20 years ago, 2002?
Right. So what happened was that after the Federal Election Campaign Act was first enacted and the FEC came into existence in 1976, there were more and more loopholes added by the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, to the law and the courts, where we ended up with a system that was not working the way it was intended to work. The political parties were getting what's called soft money, all this money that's not legal under the federal limits and prohibitions. And they were saying they were using it for state elections, but they were really using it for federal elections. McCain-Feingold was supposed to put an end to that. And what it basically said was the party committees can only accept money under the federal laws. It put restrictions on federal candidates and office holders being able to solicit money. They can only solicit money under the federal limits and prohibitions. And it had a number of other provisions. It was really a very strong law. It was immediately challenged in court by Senator McConnell and others. And most of the law was upheld by the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court talked about the importance of having laws that not only get at bribery and quid pro quo type of transactions where you pay somebody directly to do something, but also to get at the large contributions and the appearance of influence and buying access. And they said that undermined democracy. Well, then you moved ahead to 2010, and you had the Citizens United case. The important thing to know about that is that the makeup of the Supreme Court had changed. Sandra Day O'Connor had retired and was replaced. So we're now looking at a new Supreme Court, and Citizens United, for the first time, the Supreme Court said that corporations and labor unions can make unlimited what are called independent expenditures, meaning that they can use their corporate money and spend as much of it as they want on ads for candidates, et cetera, as long as it's independent. What was really concerning about that case, besides the ruling, was the court now said that really what we have to look at is quid pro quo corruption, corruption that is basically bribery, paying somebody. And it undermined what the Supreme Court had earlier said about the importance of dealing with the appearance of corruption that large contributions bring. And the Supreme Court said in the Citizens United case and cases that followed it, said that buying influence and access is not really a problem. It is a feature of democracy. And you expect office holders to be more responsive to the people who contribute to them. And that, again, undermines, in my view, the very concept of democracy, where everybody has the same voice and has the ability to be heard. And you don't have that when you have a situation where the wealthy can just drown out everybody else. And then once the election's over, they're in office, they get greater access to candidates, and they have much stronger influence with candidates. So we're now in a situation.
We have just 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I'll just say very quickly, what they've also undermined completely is the idea of independence of these groups. Elon Musk is supposed to be totally independent of Trump if he's going to spend this money. That's the only reason they allowed it. But instead, we see him at the rallies, and one has a strong suspicion that they are sharing information that will help Musk help Trump.
Larry Noble, former general counsel of the Federal Election Commission, now teaches at American University Washington College of Law, and Neil Makija, Montgomery City Commissioner and Chair of the Board of Elections in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. You can check out his video essay at democracynow.org and the New York Times. When we come back, we go to Gaza. We'll speak with Save the Children. Stay with us. Everything you do for love, just double it. Stick of Gum by Nemesis. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. It was another deadly weekend in Gaza, where UNICEF reports more than 50 children were killed in Israeli strikes on the Jabalia refugee camp in the span of 48 hours. Two residential buildings sheltering hundreds of displaced Palestinians were reportedly leveled in the attack. UNICEF is also demanding Israel launch an immediate investigation after a vehicle driven by one of its staff members came under fire by an Israeli quadcopter flying above Jabalia this weekend. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization said at least four children were injured after Israeli forces dropped a stun grenade on a polio immunization center in Gaza City's Sheikh Radwan district. Israel's attack came despite agreeing to a humanitarian pause in order to carry out the final phase of the polio immunization campaign after it was postponed in October due to Israel's indiscriminate bombardment, siege and repeated targeting of humanitarian aid workers. This is a Palestinian mother of three. Speaking from Gaza City.
I stayed here in northern Gaza along with all my children and came here to give my children the polio vaccine. They were supposed to get it a month ago, but due to the Israeli offensive and the siege, it was delayed a month. We hope it will protect the children against polio. I call on the world to stop the genocide of northern Gaza because we are literally dying. Those who do not die from bombardments are dying from hunger. The situation is catastrophic.
Some 15,000 children under the age of 10 in towns across northern Gaza, including Jabalia, Bethlehia, and Beit Hanun, still remain inaccessible and will likely not receive this dose of the oral polio vaccine due to Israel's attacks and blockade. This all comes as 15 humanitarian groups are describing the situation in northern Gaza as apocalyptic, with top UN officials again warning the entire Palestinian population in North Gaza is, quote, at imminent risk of dying from disease, famine, and violence, unquote. The region has been under an Israeli siege for nearly a month while Israel continues to block life-saving humanitarian aid from entering North Gaza. Aid groups fear the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza will soon worsen as Israel has officially notified the UN that it's cut off ties to UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. We go directly to Deir al-Balah in Gaza, where we're joined by Rachel Cummings, Save the Children's International Humanitarian Director and team lead there in Gaza. Rachel, can you describe what's happening on the ground and what you're calling for?
Hello, and thanks for the opportunity. We are calling for a ceasefire, a definitive ceasefire. You know, children in Gaza are facing an extraordinary situation. You've described it extremely well in terms of the constant onslaught and bombardment of children in Gaza, in the north, in the middle area, and in the south of Gaza, across the whole of the Gaza Strip. You know, we have over 14,000 children who have been killed. You referenced the 50 children that were killed most recently in an attack in a shelter in the north of Gaza. But this is a constant bombardment, and children are dying every single day. There is not enough food in Gaza. There is not enough water and clean water for people in Gaza. The situation is absolutely desperate.
And so what exactly has to happen in at this moment? Describe the level of aid you can get and the polio immunization programs being stopped because of the bombardment.
You know, the fact that the center that was providing the polio vaccines was attacked at this time is unfathomable. It's extraordinary that that event has happened. And, of course, that will have a knock-on effect and an impact, not only the people that were impacted at that time, but then the faith and the trust for women and parents and family members to take their children to health centers. You know, it's very important, obviously, the children to be vaccinated, but with the attacks on healthcare that are persistent, people will have lost faith and trust in the safety or the presumed safety of going to healthcare facilities to receive vaccines. So the knock-on effect on that will be massive. Now, what we need is improved access to humanitarian supplies, bring supplies in to Gaza, and then, of course, safe passage of those supplies and of our teams to be able to then reach the populations who are most in need. Every day, humanitarian workers, Save the Children staff, our partners, and other humanitarian workers across the whole of Gaza are literally risking their lives to deliver life-saving services to children and their families. This is an extraordinary and a very unique situation that we're seeing in Gaza. To be a child in Gaza, and I'm in Deir al-Balah, at the moment in the middle area of the Gaza Strip, but it's a miserable existence for children. They're living under this constant fear. They've had no formal education for over 12 months now. So that normalcy of life, that routine, and education provides a degree of protection for children, not only for their physical health, but also for their mental health. We're deeply, deeply concerned about the mental health of 1 million children in Gaza. Every single child in Gaza has been affected by this war.
And if you could comment more on the targeting of humanitarian aid workers and Israel now officially notifying the UN it's cut off ties with UNRWA. How important is UNRWA in getting aid to and being observers on the ground to what's happening there in Gaza where you are?
It's hard to quantify or describe how important, how essential UNRWA is for the humanitarian endeavor, the humanitarian response in Gaza. But Gaza is and has been for many decades, of course, wholly reliant and integrated within UNRWA, or rather UNRWA is integrated within the whole of Gaza and the Palestinian population. So as humanitarian agencies, we heavily rely on UNRWA to receive fuel, to support on coordination of access and movement of supplies. So UNRWA are a huge provider of life-saving services. Every day, they're providing over 15,000 consultations in the health facilities. Hundreds of thousands of people are living in the UNRWA-designated shelters that were previous UNRWA schools. Every sort of strand of society is wrapped up with UNRWA. So the cessation of UNRWA in terms of providing humanitarian life-saving support to the population here is extraordinary to even consider.
Rachel Cummings, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Save the Children's International Humanitarian Director and Team Lead in Gaza, speaking to us from Deir al-Balah. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris campaigned in the battleground state of Michigan over the weekend, where they sought support from Michigan's 200,000 Arab American and Muslim voters, many of whom who've denounced U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. Kamala Harris addressed supporters at a massive rally in East Lansing, Michigan. She began her address with a nod to civilian victims of Israel's war.
This year has been difficult, given the scale of death and destruction in Gaza, and given the civilian casualties and displacement in Lebanon. It is devastating. And as president, I will do everything in my power to end the war in Gaza. To bring home the hostages, end the suffering in Gaza, ensure Israel is secure, and ensure the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, freedom, security, and self-determination.
Visited East Lansing after President Trump traveled to Dearborn Friday, marking the first time a leading presidential candidate visited the Arab American majority city. Trump was questioned by reporters.
Sir, what conversations did you have recently with Prime Minister Netanyahu about bringing peace?
We're going to bring peace. You're going to have peace in the Middle East, but not with the clowns that you have running the U.S. right now. You're going to have peace. You're going to have peace in the Middle East, and they should have peace in the Middle East, but not with the clowns you have in the Middle East. Let me tell you, what you have, people in the Middle East that aren't doing their job, and you have people in the U.S. that aren't doing their job, and when they get it together, when they get it right, you're going to have peace in the Middle East.
For more, we go to Dearborn, Michigan, to speak with Mayor Abdullah Hamoud, who refused to meet with President Trump, but has also declined to endorse Kamala Harris. Mayor, welcome back to Democracy Now! First, explain your decision not to meet with President Trump.
Yeah, I'm not somebody to be fooled by President Trump. I think we very clearly understand where Donald Trump falls on the issues. This is the president that ushered in the Muslim ban, that wants to be the architect of the Muslim ban 2.0. This is somebody that annexed the Golan Heights, somebody that eliminated all funding for the Palestinian humanitarian causes and issues within the congressional budgets. This is somebody that provided Saudi Arabia with the arms to kill over 30,000 people, innocent civilians in Yemen. And so I'm not here to be fooled by President Donald Trump. And so I refuse a meeting with Donald Trump out of principle, because that is not my president.
And talk about your position on Kamala Harris, who just addressed this massive crowd in East Lansing.
You know, for the last almost over a year now, what we have been calling for is for a ceasefire and to achieve a ceasefire by the appropriate means. And based on all the conversations that we've had, based on historical knowledge of how ceasefires were achieved, there has to be the willingness of the president to pick up the phone and to demand from Benjamin Netanyahu, that war criminal and his cabinet, to achieve a ceasefire. And you have to be willing to impose an arms embargo. What we have not yet heard from this president is the willingness to enact an arms embargo. And I think that is the frustration that many of us have. Yes, we want to ensure that Palestinians have the right to self-determination and take it a step further. We want to ensure that Palestinians have a just state of their own. I think that is what's extremely important to also call out. But what we have not seen in the policy that has been pushed out by the vice president is if she will go about or how she will go about in accomplishing this.
You are Lebanese American. Can you talk about what's happened to your family in Lebanon?
My family has been displaced. The first Lebanese American citizen that has been killed was a Dearborn resident, a very close family friend's father, Hashkem Jawad. My wife has lost several family members now, one of whom was a paramedic who was assassinated as he was trying to help others. There is a blanket of grief now in the city of Dearborn, where folks are attending funeral services, offering condolences to family by the masses. I'm attending services not for one or two individuals, but for 12 and 20 on any given day. Celebratory events have been postponed. This is the climate right now in the city of Dearborn. And so when folks come here to knock on doors or to ask how people will vote, you have to understand for many, almost everybody I know has now lost a loved one or know a loved one who has been injured or displaced, or whose ancestral home has been decimated. That is the current climate right now in the city of Dearborn.
Have you ever met with Vice President Kamala Harris?
There have been many conversations across campaign teams, and there's been many conversations going back to even when President Biden was the presidential the nominee for the Democratic Party. What I would say is we have made our position points very clear. We've been communicating very clearly, whether it was with senior White House staffers or with the campaign officials, about where we stand on these issues. And if there's an unwillingness to move off of the genocide for Gaza, off of enabling and funding this genocide that is being conducted across Gaza and now encroaching within Lebanon, then there is an unwillingness for us to step forward and endorse any candidate. You know, my loyalties, first and foremost, are to the people of my community, the people of this city, of this district. And so we're willing to put people over party, first and foremost, to ensure that we utilize the platform that has been entrusted to us by the people to elevate their voices in this time of need.
And to those who say they cannot support Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, some not voting, others voting for a third-party candidate like Jill Stein, your response to also those who then say that a vote for Jill Stein would be a vote for Trump?
Given the level of grief that you just hear about on a daily basis within this community, my main concern is to ensure that people come out and cast their ballots and vote. Apathy, I think, is the most destructive thing. People forget in 2016, it wasn't that Donald Trump won by less than 11,000 votes. It was the fact that 80,000 people had skipped the presidential question. And so my job, first and foremost, what I have endorsed is that people come out and vote, to not sit on a sideline, regardless of all that has unfolded and happened to you directly or indirectly. What I can assure you is that sitting on the sideline will accomplish nothing. And so I've called on people to vote their moral conscience, to go out, to at least begin with the local ballot questions, the local elections, and then work their way up to the ballot as they get to that presidential question.
You, Abdullah Hamoud, are the first Arab American and first Muslim mayor of Dearborn. You have stressed that it's not only about a presidential election, it's about the local level. Can you talk about what this election means for you, for Rashida Tlaib of Detroit, outspoken supporters of Palestinians, of Lebanese, of against Israel's war on Gaza?
What you have heard over the last year is this community taking a principled position. This was the community in which the Uncommitted Movement was founded and blossomed organically across this country. But what you're hearing from many of our residents, from many of our constituents, from the anti-war, anti-justice movement, or pro-justice movement, broadly speaking, is that this is a community that says If we want to end gun violence and mass shootings in schools within the states, then we must also be willing to not provide a war criminal 2,000-pound J-bombs to decimate every school and university across Gaza. If we want to expand access to healthcare, then we also must be willing to hold to account any government that bombs or decimates every healthcare facility across all of Palestine or across Lebanon. These are the morals and the values that we have, and this is the principal position that we have taken. And this is not just a position that is popular here in the city of Dearborn. But if you look across the polls, across this country, you have seen that the center of America has moved on the issue of Israel and Palestine. And what has yet to be had is the center of the two major political parties in this country to move on the issue as well.
Abdullah Hammoud, I want to thank you for being with us. Mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, just declined to meet with Donald Trump in Dearborn over support of Israel's assault on Gaza, but has not endorsed Kamala Harris, though encourages people to go out and vote. There are apparently six third-party presidential candidates in Michigan. Tune in on election night. That's tomorrow, Tuesday, November 5th, for our Democracy Now! Four-hour election special from 8 to midnight Eastern time on Wednesday, 8 to 10 in the morning a.m. Eastern Time. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
CFRC 101.9 FM has new social media. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at CFRC Music and keep up with the latest announcements about our programming and projects. Follow us today at CFRC Music.